Welcome to Life Quest Liberty, live in-depth conversations with today's top writers, editors, and spiritual leaders concerning religious freedom around the world. On today's broadcast, we'll examine local and international factors that may be impacting your right to worship and obey God as your conscience dictates. I'm your Life Quest Liberty host, Charles Mills. Anytime our guest today is scheduled to be on the show, I know something important is happening in the world of religious freedom. Todd McFarlane is Associate General Counsel of the Seventh-day Adventist Church and is speaking to us from the editorial offices of Liberty Magazine in Silver Spring, Maryland. Todd, there's a story in Alabaster, Alabama that we need to know about, right?
Absolutely. We have a case down there pending against the city of Alabaster for arresting and charging one of our students for criminal violation for going door-to-door doing evangelistic work.
Criminal violation, you're saying?
Criminal violation. Okay. Punishable, I believe, up to 6 months hard labor for the city of Alabaster.
Okay, you're going to have to explain this thing. How can a person walking up to a door and knocking on it be a criminal act?
Sure. So this is all public record. So Stephen Douglas, who is a student, is, I believe, going to Oakwood right now, Oakwood Adventist University there in Huntsville. Last summer of 2012, he worked for what we refer to within the church as the MAGA Book program, mm-hmm. But it's also the Student Summer Literature Evangelist program. And that is a program in which older high school and college age students go door to door distributing free religious literature and also soliciting donations to support their Christian education. Mm-hmm. And so they have these books, which, like I said, internally referred to them as MAGA books. It's a combination of the magazine and a book. Mm-hmm. And they make those available. They're on a variety of topics. There's children's books, excerpts from the Bible stories. For Adventists, we'll be familiar with those books. And then, some general character building books. There's also some health books on healthy living, including some cookbooks that are available. And also books like Desire of Ages and Prophets and Kings and some of the Acts of the Apostles and so forth are available, and Great Controversy. It's a collection of different, up to 20 books, I think, are in their canvas is the phrase they use. And they make those available to people. And they're made available on a donation basis. Individuals, they can give a donation and not take a book. They can take a book and not make a donation. But, the pitch is they talk about that it helps support their Christian education. In fact, the students can get up to 50% of the donations they can then use for their high school or college education and Adventist school. Mm-hmm. And so Mr. Douglas was doing this, and he was stopped by two police officers ultimately in the city of Alabaster. He was told several different things, and exactly what the city of Alabaster's position is something we are even to this day trying to figure out in the litigation. Mm-hmm. But he was told he had to get a business license, and he needed to go down to the city and get the business license. They charged him and wrote him a ticket, and then they told the rest of our students that if they did not get out of town and without getting a business license, or if they didn't leave town or get a business license, that they too would be criminally charged. Our office was contacted immediately. We did leave the town. Just to give everyone an idea, Alabaster, Alabama is in the greater Birmingham, Alabama area. Okay. So there were other towns they could go to in the time being. We reached out to the city of Alabaster, and their attorney, he was very reluctant to talk to me. In fact, refused to for several days. Sent him a letter, faxed him, emailed him, I believe, and, finally got a hold of him. And I should also just back up here for a minute. The first thing we were trying to do is find out, what is this ordinance? What is it we need to comply with and so forth? What is it we have to do? Well, most cities, here in the 21st century have made their ordinances available online. Mm-hmm. So, if you to comply with it, you just go online and you can read it. Well, for the city of Alabaster, the only way you can get their ordinances is going down there and looking at them. And if you want to get a copy of them, you've got to fill out the special form, pay a fee in advance, and then they will give you a copy of it in writing, which is, it may meet the bare minimum requirements required by the law for due process, but it is absolutely the hallmark of a city that is not being transparent, is not being fair to its citizens and other people by making as difficult as possible to, find out what the law is. They literally made it as difficult as they legally could to make it what the law is. So anyway, so we finally got a hold of the ordinance, which was no big deal. The ordinance was unconstitutional from beginning to end. It violated almost every aspect of what the First Amendment says. And we can talk about that more in depth here in a little bit. Mm-hmm. So I reached out to the city attorney, and we've done this quite a few times in other municipalities. And most of the time, when we get the city attorney on the phone, we explain what we're doing, and we explain, you know, what the law is and why their ordinance, which most of them have not read and are not familiar with, is. We come to an agreement. We'd had a case about 2 weeks before that over in Georgia where they had arrested 6 of our kids and actually hauled them to jail, and they had to be bailed out. When I got a hold of the city attorney, you know, he was apologetic. They dropped the charges. They refunded all the bail money. Our kids were allowed to go back in and continue working. And that's the experience we usually have with city attorneys. Mm-hmm. The city of Alabaster is completely different. When I finally got the city attorney on the line, he was very gruff, very unfriendly. He simply said, you know, first he made it clear he had better things to be doing than talking to me. And then second, you know, he simply said they need to get a license. And I said, well, you know, that's unconstitutional. And I gave him the reasons for it. And he said, well, no, we think they're selling and that they have to get a business license and comply with the solicitors and peddlers ordinance. And I said, well, you know, if we can't get this worked out, I'm just going to have to file, you know, suit in federal court. And he said, that's fine. And he really left us no choice. So we started drafting up the complaint in the temporary restraining order called the TRO and asking for a preliminary injunction and so forth. We got that ready. Just in case, you know, he didn't think we were serious, the night before we filed it, I sent it to him, everything all prepared just as we were going to file it, saying, you know, unless we can get something worked out, we're going to have to file this in federal court tomorrow morning. Mm-hmm. Sent it to him, didn't hear a word from him. We filed it on a Friday. We had a conference call with the judge on a Friday afternoon. And then that next Wednesday, we went in front of a federal court judge and argued for our TRO.
Let me just ask right here that if those kids, if Stephen Douglas and et al., were selling books about how to garden or books about how to raise children, and it had nothing to do with religion, would all of this come down? Are they throwing a broad blanket here, or do you think there's a little more targeting going on?
Well, what they argued was, and you know, and we don't have any evidence that they were targeting Adventist or Christians mm-hmm. in particular, though that's who they did charge. Yeah. No, what their argument was is anyone going to door-to-door selling has to get these permits. First of all, we weren't selling. We contend we weren't selling. We said the people could take the books for free. You know, you try doing that at Walmart, you'll get arrested. they did ask for donations. Yeah. And so they said that constituted selling. We said we disagree. But what we said was, even if you consider this to be selling, which it's not, the Supreme Court back in the 1940s said when it's religious literature, when it's door-to-door evangelistic work, the First Amendment prohibits you requiring people to get a business license. Mm. Second of all, you know, on door-to-door solicitations, you know, whether you're the Hoover vacuum salesperson or raising money for the American Red Cross or whatever you're doing, that ordinance in and of itself was unconstitutional because, for other things, it was a prior restraint. So, in other words, that's this concept in the law that you can make it against the law for you, Charles Mills, to say defamatory things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the people can then, you know, be civilly charged and so forth. But restraining you ahead of time mm-hmm. is a big constitutional no-no. The other thing that their ordinance did was it gave really incomplete, unfettered discretion to their little committee to decide who got the permit or not. And that is unconstitutional. So in other words, you know, if you go down to the city and say, we want to have a big rally and march down the street and get a, you know, and get a parade permit. Mm-hmm. And that's something they can legitimately permit if you're going to block off streets and so forth. What they can't do is then say, okay, fill out this form, let us think about it, mm-hmm. and then we'll decide if, you know, if we like, you know, your parade. It has to be no discretion. And there was tons of discretion in whether or not people got these solicitation permits. And, you know, what was extremely disappointing was, first of all, as city attorneys, you should be familiar with the law that governs these issues. Yeah. But even if you're not, once we explained it to them, once I sent him the Supreme Court cases, once I, you know, pointed out why all the, you know, the infirmities in their ordinance, they were completely unwilling to compromise or talk to us, unlike almost every other community we've dealt with.
Is this a case of ignorance? Is this a case of blindness? If the information is there and these are intelligent, educated people who are, I'm assuming they are intelligent, and this is in the Bible Belt too, is this a case of them simply not knowing what is the law and what not is the law? Or do you think that there is some background or history involved in their decision?
Well, you know, it's hard for me to say. I mean, you know, when you start imputing motives to individuals, that, you know, that gets to be dangerous territory because, I, you know, I don't know what they're thinking. I mean, and I don't mean that pejoratively. I just really, you know, sometimes you know where people are coming from. I really don't in this particular case. And I should say the case is still ongoing. Yeah. In fact, we're getting ready to do depositions here in the next
week. In other words, they're staying with it. They're keeping with it. They're holding.
Absolutely. Yeah. They are absolutely. So, you know, we didn't really finish the story about, you know, what happened when we had that Wednesday TRO hearing.
Yeah, go.
But just to answer your question is we don't have any indication, just to be clear, that this is, you know, particular animus against Adventists or Seventh-day Adventists. Okay. There's nothing to do that. And so I don't want, you know, people to think, you know, that that this was, you know, their attempt to get at Adventists. You know, and we obviously, even more generically, don't have any indication that this was an attempt to get at Christians. I mean, this is the Bible Belt. I'm sure, you know, all the individuals are Christian themselves and so forth. So there's no indication on that. I think there's probably other things at work. So let's just, yeah, I'll finish up. So we had the hearing on Wednesday, which, by the way, to get in front of a federal judge that quickly is difficult. But she was able to make time in our schedule for us, which we were greatly appreciative. We submitted documents ahead of time, and then we had witnesses come, and they called both Mr. Douglas and two of the other students who were actually plaintiffs in the case, who were dissuaded from going into Alabaster because of the threats that were made against them. And they asked them a bunch of questions, cross-examined them. We cross-examined their witnesses. As it turned out, for better or worse, the city clerk, the one that I was having such a difficult time getting the ordinance from, you know, and who was insisting that we make payment and, you know, wouldn't fax it to us and didn't make it available online, we had actually been to her house and she had made a donation and gotten several books, which we didn't really know about ahead of time. But she, one of the things she claimed was, and this was part of where they were coming from, and this is what they argued, was she said, well, I didn't consider the books to be religious. I'm like, okay, really? Let's take a look at the books. So there are four of them.
I've seen those books.
So book one has a picture of a guy on a donkey dressed in white, surrounded by people praising him. I'm like, might this be Jesus? Well, yes, it is. And within the book were stories about Jesus.
Yes.
The next book had a guy standing in front of a boat with a white beard and flowing robes preaching. And I said, now, in the court hearing, you'll find this amusing, I said, might that be Moses? And everyone kind of looked up at me very strange, and I said, I'm sorry, maybe it was Noah. Yeah. And, of course, it was stories from the Old Testament.
Yeah.
She's like, well, you know, but the book I only really looked at was this children's Kids in the Kitchen, I believe is what it was called. And it was a children's cooking book. I'm like, you don't think this is religious? No. And I'm like, can you turn to the very beginning and to the front page there? What's the first paragraph say? And she's like, she reads it out loud. And it starts out something along the lines of, do you know that God thinks that you're special and he wants you to be healthy? And in this cookbook, and it talks about healthy recipes. Yeah. And then I go, and we'll turn a couple more pages, and there's like, you know, 10 tips to healthy living. And like, what's tip number 10? Read a Bible verse every day. Mm. And there was some other stuff in there too. But it was clear, even this, you know, this kid's cooking book was all geared and was in religious in nature and is from a religious perspective.
Yeah.
And so after we got done with that, it became pretty clear that this was religious material and that these students were there, you know, for a religious purpose. They continued to try to argue that, no, this was just sales. But the problem was they couldn't get around the Murdoch opinion, which is that one from the 1940s I was talking about, which is, you know, and there's also one from 2002 called Village of Stratton, and they just couldn't get around that. Mm-hmm. What we ended up doing is, because of the judge's schedule and everything, we ended up coming up with an agreement. And the agreement was that the students could go back into the city of Alabaster, continue their work that summer, and we would continue that until we could have a full trial on the merits. And that full trial on the merits is tentatively scheduled for April of 2013.
So they want to take this thing to trial. I mean, they're not willing to say, well, maybe we had a knee-jerk response here. Maybe we saw this wrong. Maybe we're reading this wrong. What do they think they're going to accomplish in trial that's going to be different from what you guys have accomplished so far?
I have no idea. I have been surprised myself, but, you know, we are currently, in fact, you know, later today, they're wanting to take depositions of our students, and, you know, we're getting them dates and so forth, and we're going to depose their people, and then we'll do what's known as motion practice, and we'll ask the court to decide the case in our favor, and they'll ask the court to decide it in their favor, and then the judge has three decisions there. She can rule for us, she can rule for them, or she can say there needs to be a full trial, and if that happens, that will be in April. I think that this case will be decided on what's known as summary judgment. In other words, the judge will say, I'm going to decide this issue as a matter of law, mm-hmm. not a matter of fact. So, you know, when judges, that there's no factual disputes and that she can just rule as a matter of law. But no, I have been very surprised they pushed this forward. We have suggested, you know, settlement options to them. We've told them, you know, here's the terms we'd be willing to settle on. And, you know, they have declined and they really haven't made a counteroffer. And so, you know, I don't know what else we can do. I think they just think we'll go away.
Yeah.
But that, you know, at this point,
they don't know you very well.
Well, no, and I think at this point they understand that. I would hope so.
Now, when you say they, who exactly is they?
Well, that would be I guess it would be the city of Alabaster.
Okay.
That is the defendant. But you know, they have lawyers and so forth, and then, you know, there's nothing against their lawyers. I mean, they're just doing, you know, what they're told to by their client.
Yeah.
On the other hand, if I was their lawyer, I would be advising them, you've got to settle this case and settle it quickly, because there's not a snowball's chance in July in Alabaster that you're going to win. You know, I could be wrong. I mean, there's been cases in the past I've thought I would win and didn't, but this is about as strong a case as I've had. You know, and the reality is, I mean, you know, I think we ended up citing, like, you know, 50 some odd U.S. Supreme Court opinions in our favor.
Yeah.
I mean, the evidence really is overwhelming in the law on this issue.
In a recent Liberty Magazine editorial, Lincoln Steed wrote, "My lesson from the present is that religious liberty is a global need. We are implicated in the most severe tests to religious liberty observed elsewhere. And in the aftershocks that those cases provoke, we are even ourselves at risk of drifting from the true practice of liberty. We must show an engaged commitment to religious freedom, no matter the cost." For more insights, visit libertymagazine.org. Well, bless their hearts, you know, they, the city of Alabaster, seems to have a real passion for this subject. I'm thinking that there must be something else that is swirling around this case that they're trying to keep from happening, and they think that if they open the door to the Megabook program, they're opening the door to something else. Did you get a feeling of that at all, Todd, as you dealt with them?
They certainly feel like, and have stated, that they have concern, you know, about other individuals and other groups.
Yeah.
There's two levels in that. First of all, maybe you can pass an ordinance, but you got to pass one that's constitutional. And this one's unconstitutional to everyone. Second of all, by pushing this forward, I mean, what they could have done early on, even before we filed the lawsuit, is simply said, all right, yeah, we didn't really mean this to apply to you. We won't enforce it against you. Your kids can come back in. Let us know when they're going to be there and everything. And then their law stands. By pushing this issue, what's going to happen is, if they don't back off and we win, their entire ordinance is going to get struck down as unconstitutional. And then that means, you know, now they can always pass a new ordinance, but that means that nobody has to get a permit. And so they're really, if the, you know, if their interest is protecting the city of citizens of Alabaster, they'd be much better off settling this case, passing a constitutional ordinance, and moving forward. Because it is right now, I can tell you, if someone is charged with violating this solicitor and peddler's ordinance, they can win that case because it is so unconstitutional.
I'm curious to know about the citizens of Alabaster. Was the Megabook program doing well in that area?
Yeah. No, our summer student literature evangelist program was doing well. We'd been in there for a couple weeks before our kids got stopped. It had been a successful area, and that was one of the reasons they were excited about going back into it. And And so, no, you know, it's interesting. This story, when we filed it, much to my surprise, I got to say, I guess I was a little naive, we almost immediately got phone calls from various individuals and from news reporters. This, it ended up making two of the local television stations, mm-hmm. did stories on it, CBS and Fox affiliate, a local radio station did a story, the local newspaper did. That story got picked up by the Huffington Post, by the Washington mm-hmm. Post, Salt Lake City Tribune, a lot of other areas, you know, did it. It got a fair amount of media attention, and which, you know, like I said, that, you know, we participated in it, but, you know, I didn't solicit any of that. But it turns out when you sue a city, it turns out that reporters, especially for the First Amendment, are interested in that.
Yeah, yeah. You know, this case is really extremely interesting. You say that when the Megabook people come in and they go to an area and they start doing their thing, don't they check the ordinances? Wouldn't they have seen that the ordinances of Alabaster says you can't do this?
No, and that's an interesting part that I probably should have started off with. So what happened was, first of all, as I indicated at the top of the show, these ordinances are not available in many cases online. Mm-hmm. So to actually find out what the ordinance is, you'd have to go down to the city, ask to look at the ordinances, find what it is, and then, you know, these people are not lawyers. Read through it, see if it applies to you, which isn't entirely obvious. Mm-hmm. So what we do is, and what happened in this case is, the leader, I think back, you know, in May before this all happened, yeah. Sent a letter to the chief of police, described the program, said what we're going to do, said that, you know, basically we, you know, we're going to be there. We don't think this violates any laws, but if you have a problem, let us know. Mm-hmm. The chief of police for Alabaster didn't respond, got mm-hmm. the letter, ignored it. And, you know, and then turns around and arrests our kids. Yeah. That is not the sign of a city and a community that is trying to act in good faith. Okay. If you're trying to, now it's legal. I mean, there's, you know, there's nothing that says if you send them a letter, they have to respond and they can't, you know, then enforce their ordinance. So they, you know, they're with the law. But if you're really trying to solve the problem, if you're really trying to work with your community, if you really are in good faith, you get that letter, you say, oh, wait a minute, this is a problem. Mm-hmm. No, we have an ordinance. They have to get permits. You then send a letter back or an email or call and say, no, no, you've got to get a permit. And if they had done that, it would have eventually worked its way up to me. We would have reached out to the city attorney. We would have reached out to the police, and we would have either come to a resolution or, you know, we would have ended up in federal court like we were. But what we would have avoided is now you have, you know, you have a city in the South, Alabaster, Alabama, giving, you know, an African-American teenage kid who did nothing more wrong than trying to share his faith to door-to-door now has an arrest record. Now, we are confident that we'll be able to have him not convicted, but, you know, he has an arrest record now. Yeah. And that just is morally wrong for a city to do that when they could have avoided the entire problem by just simply responding to the letter that was sent to them. Now, is it legal? Sure. I mean, to the extent that any of this prosecution is legal. Right. But it just is not the right thing to do. And that's my biggest problem with the city of Alabaster, is that every time we've done this, is they just haven't done the right thing. They also haven't done the constitutional thing.
Yeah. And they're staying with it. They're keeping at it. They're dragging this thing out. So I just think that there's something going on that we're not seeing. That if someone, you know, if you got them to sit down and talk to you and open up to you, you'd say, "Oh, well, that's your issue. Is that what this is all about?" Do you think that might be the case, Tom?
You know, all I can say is, you know, we have been open to you know, dialogue and so forth, and of a confidential nature with them, and have these with communities and so forth. I mean, we had a community to the north of Alabaster that, and I'm not very happy with the way the community did it, but what happened was a bunch of our students got stopped. And again, in my view, this was purely racial profiling, but the city, I'm sure, disagrees. There had been a break-in and a burglary in the area, and there was a general description of the person was black. And our students, I should say, all of these people were African-American in this program. And so they stopped our kids and said, well, we think, you know, you might have involved for questioning and so forth, and held them for several hours. The cops made certain misrepresentations to them and so forth and lied to our students, which, you know, which cops are entitled to do. Law says they can do that.
Were these police officers African-American?
I don't know the race of them. Okay. Some of them were white. Okay. I'm not sure the whole race of the officers. Okay. You know, eventually they released the students, but they told them in very emphatic and profane ways that they needed to leave town. So we knew what was going on there. There was a certain amount of sort of unfortunate that our students happened to be in the same area of where there had been a break-in. I don't think the police handled it the correct way, but we reached out to the city and we ended up getting it such worked out. You know, the leader of the program ended up talking to the mayor and to the city attorney and so forth. We addressed the issue, you know, and we're free to go back in that community next season if we want. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a case where there was something going on there. We knew about some of it we didn't. And we were able to work and address their concerns, and we're always open to do that. But, you know, it becomes difficult to do that when the city won't communicate with you.
Todd, I want to ask you a question here. It just seems to me that this world and the people in it are becoming ruder and cruder and more angry. Do you find that in the cases that you are seeing now? Are you finding that the undercurrent of rage and unhappiness and disillusion is growing in the hearts and minds of people who are bringing these types of actions to the forefront?
We certainly have seen an increase in these ordinances against our students. There's no question about that. Mm-hmm. You know, in talking to the people who head these programs up, the literature evangelists, they've seen this, and especially since 2008. Yes. What we think part of this has been, especially at the street level, this is the local citizens calling and the cops, is that with the economic downturn and so forth, we believe that there were more individuals who sort of went into the door-to-door work. Mm. And quite frankly, door-to-door work is a marginal economic activity.
Yes.
I mean, it's not necessarily the most efficient way to do things, especially if you're, and I'm talking about other people, if you're doing sales work and so forth. And so when you have a down economy, but there's low barriers to entry. All you have to do is just, a pair of good shoes and so forth. Mm. And so we think that there's been increased number of people doing this kind of work, and the concerns that the communities have had with that have caused them to increase their enforcement of these laws. You know, when we've worked with the local communities, for the most part, like I said, with Alabaster being the striking exception, we have found the city attorneys and city officials to be fine to work with. Mm-hmm. And that's really what our goal is. I mean, these cases are hugely expensive.
Yes.
I mean, this case, if it goes on through trial or appeal, will be a six-figure case, plus the amount of time and so forth that goes into it. The goal of the Adventist Church in this program is not litigation, but to spread the gospel. Mm-hmm. And we don't view litigation as a method, that to further that. We will do it if we have to. So, we've always attempted to work these deals, to work something out. It's the most efficient way for everybody. And most communities are willing to do that once we can sit down and talk to them. But, there's some that aren't.
My. Well, Todd, we'll be looking to you to bring us updates on the Alabaster case as it unfolds down there in Alabama. This is interesting, and really appreciate you bringing it to our attention, Todd. Thanks for being on the show today.
It's great to be with you.
Listener, I want to invite you also to the website, libertymagazine.org. We'll repeat that address in just a moment. Here you'll find resources that will help you as you better yourself, better your insights into what's happening in the world of religious freedom. That's libertymagazine.org. Until next time, this is Charles Mills, along with Todd McFarlane, Associate General Counsel of the Seventh-day Adventist Church, inviting you to rest in the freedom of God's love. Goodbye, everyone. You've been listening to Life Quest Liberty. To further explore the issues discussed on today's program, visit www.libertymagazine.org. Join us again next week at this same time as we examine more of the threats and challenges facing your religious freedom. May God keep the flames of religious freedom burning in your heart today.